After the distressing events of the previous night, when Ralph Nickleby and Wackford Squeers attempted once again to snatch Smike from the safety and comfort of the Nickleby cottage, Nicholas wastes no time in seeking the advice of his good friends, the Cheerable Brothers.
Of course, dear chap. If it is wisdom you want, no man is wiser than Brother Ned.
Oh, no, indeed. Brother Charles is the man to ask.
No. Brother Ned is wisest in all things. Except for knowing who is wisest.
No, that is the only thing I am wise in, and on that matter I am wise.
Just as soon as this ferocious argument can be settled, Nicholas recounts the shocking new discovery relating to Smike and Mr. Snorley.
I must also confess that Smike refused to go with his newly found father.
Go on.
And that I myself supported him in his disobedience.
Uh-huh.
In defense of my actions, I must impress upon you that Smike's horror of Mr. Snorley is so deeply rooted that I can scarcely believe he really is his father. Nature does not seem to have planted in his breast one lingering jot of affection for him, and surely she can never err.
My dear sir, you talk of nature as an abstract thing and lose sight of what is natural while you do so. Here is a poor lad who has never felt a parent's care, who has scarcely known anything all his life but suffering and sorrow.
Oh, that's right, Brother Charles, yes. And then the boy is presented to a man purporting to be his father, whose first and unpaternal act is an attempt to snuff out his short-lived happiness.
Indeed, if nature put into that lad's breast any feeling of affection, she would be a liar and an idiot.
She would indeed.
I am much comforted by your wise words and relieved that you are not shocked by my keeping the boy from his father.
No, we are not, for two reasons. One, we believe you acted entirely correctly.
And two, we already knew of the incident.
But how?
Your uncle has been here this morning.
Here?
Yeah, to complain of you.
Yes.
To poison our ears with calumnies and falsehoods.
But he came on a fruitless errand and went away with wholesome truths in his ear besides. Did he not, Brother Charles?
He did.
Yeah. Brother Ned was hard upon him.
Oh.
Brother Ned could have melted a paving stone.
Why, Brother Charles was a perfect lion. He was at him, sir, before you could say Jack Robinson.
How can I ever thank you for all the deep obligations you impose upon me every day?
By keeping silence upon the subject, sir.
Yes, sir.
And do not worry. Nobody belonging to you shall be wronged. They shall not hurt a hair of your head.
No,
nor the boy's head.
Nor your mother's head.
Nor your sister's head. I have seen the father, if he is the father, and he is a barbarian and a hypocrite. I told him so, and I'm glad I did.
I wish I could find the
No. The subject is at an end for the present. Now, I'm going to speak upon another subject now. A confidential subject, Mr. Nickleby. We are about to employ you on a secret and delicate mission. The object of this mission is a young lady.
A young lady?
A very beautiful young lady. The young lady, in fact, whom you accidentally saw in this room one morning, sir, in a very sorrowful state. Please, Nicholas, help the young lady to her feet. Do you remember?
I remember it very well indeed.
Her name is Miss Madeline Bray. She is the daughter of a lady who, when she was a beautiful girl herself, and I was very many years younger, I loved very dearly. Sadly, she married someone else. And I wish I could add that he made her happy. Alas, this was not the case.
They fell into difficulties brought about by his profligacy alone. She endured much hardship and cruelty, and she finally came 12 months before her death to appeal to our old friendship.
She was sadly changed, sadly altered, broken-spirited from suffering and ill usage, and almost broken-hearted. In those times, her daughter was a mere child. After her mother died, we never saw Madeline again. Until that morning, when you saw her also.
And how is she now?
Well, she braves privation, degradation, and everything most terrible to such a delicate creature's heart. For the purpose of supporting her father. She struggles to maintain her father by the labor of her hands. She toils by day and night, working at the needle, the pencil, and the pen. And has done so for many years.
Well, can this be enough to sustain them?
No. Though she labors in all these capacities and wearies in none, she cannot meet the many demands of her father.
And so, several weeks ago, she was compelled to seek out her mother's old friends, and with a bursting heart to confide in us at last.
And will you help her?
We will do all in our power to help her, but the task is a difficult one. Yeah, if her father were dead, nothing could be easier, for then she could share and cheer the happiest home that Brother Ned and I could have.
Yes.
As if she were our child or sister. But he is still alive, and nobody can help him. That has been tried 1,000 times. He was not abandoned by all without good cause.
Then what is to be done?
Well, Brother Charles and I have an idea.
Tell me.
Well, we have decided to purchase her drawings and ornamental work at a high price, and keep up a constant demand for them.
Excellent.
Yeah. And we shall require you to act as representative of the unknown dealer who is buying her work.
Me?
If you will. Her father knows me, and he knows my brother Ned. Now, Frank is a good fellow, but we're afraid he might be too susceptible to her beauty and fall in love with her before he knows well his own mind.
I see.
Yes, we do not want him carrying pain and sorrow into the same innocent breast which we would be the humble instruments of gradually making happy.
No, of course.
He took extraordinary interest in her fortunes when he first encountered her. And it was on her behalf he became embroiled in that fight at the Saracen's Head when you first met him.
And the young lady, sir, does she know? Is she party to this innocent deceit?
She knows you come from us. She does not know how we shall dispose of these little productions that you will purchase.
And perhaps,
if you did it very well, she might be brought to believe that we made a profit or something. Good. Then it is agreed.
Yes, indeed. It is all agreed.
Wait. I must tell you something.
What is it?
I confess that I...
that I love this lady with all my heart and soul.
I shall be honored to carry out this task.
We knew we could rely on you.
Yeah. So, thinking himself a true martyr, Nicholas decides to keep his feelings secret.
Besides, what if I do love her? Should I not appear most arrogant if I believed she was in any danger of falling in love with me?
Thus resolving selflessly to do what, if he examined his own heart a little more carefully, he would have found he could not resist, Nicholas directs his steps towards the house of Madeline Bray. He rushes through the dusty suburbs, past shellfish carts, ginger beer vans, greengrocers and pawn shops, hardly able to believe he will soon see the object of his dreams again.
I do love her, but I am now bound in honour to repress these thoughts. Oh, I should not have lied to the cherub. I did not lie. I merely... Why, it would be a worse thing to throw difficulties in the way of this benevolent and high-minded design.
And so, resolving to visit Madeline as often as necessary, Nicholas demonstrates that special skill of humankind to change our weaknesses into the most magnificent virtues. With a palpitating heart, Nicholas opens the rickety gate dangling on its hinges and knocks on the shabby door with a faltering hand. A servant leads him through the dim and dismal house to a small room. There at the window sits Madeline Bray, working with her needle.
Why, she is 1,000 times more beautiful than I ever yet supposed her to be. She is...
Madeline!
A haggard man, propped on some pillows in an easy chair, is watching Nicholas with fiery, sunken eyes.
Madeline! Who is this? What does anybody want here? Who told a stranger we could be seen? What is it?
I believe...
You always believe! What is it?
Excuse me. Good day to you both. I have come to see... to order a pair of hand screens and some painted velvet.
Yes, I've been expecting you. What design would you like?
Something quite beautiful, dazzling. Elegant, but pale and delicate.
Have you any payment for us?
Why, yes. I'm sorry. I quite forgot.
Nicholas removes an envelope from his pocket and lays it on the table.
See that the money is right, Madeline. Count the money, my dear.
I'm sure this is correct.
What are you talking about, Madeline? You're sure? How can you be sure of anything? Give it to me. Let me see. £5. Is that right?
Father, quite right.
Madeline bends over to arrange the old man's pillows. Nicholas cannot see her face clearly, but thinks he sees a tear fall.
Ring the bell! Tell Emily to get it changed and to get me a newspaper and some grapes and another bottle of the wine I had last week. And I forget half of what I want now, but she can go out again. Let her get those first. Quickly, Madeline, quickly. Good God, how slow you are. And give the man a receipt.
No, it is no matter.
No matter? What do you mean, no matter? Do you think you bring your paltry money here as a favour? Damn you, sir, if you can't appreciate the goods you deal in. Don't you know that you are talking to a gentleman who at one time could have bought up 50 men such as you?
I merely mean that as I shall have many dealings with this lady, if she will allow me, I will not trouble her with such formalities.
That is very kind of you, sir.
Kind? It is not kind. Don't talk nonsense, girl. Give him a receipt. And mind you always do so.
Yes, Father.
When shall I call again?
When you are requested, and not before. Madeline, my dear, when is this person to call again?
Oh, not for 3 or 4 weeks. It is not necessary, indeed. I can do without.
How can we do without? 3 or 4 weeks, Madeline. 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, sooner. Sooner, if you please.
Oh, 3 or 4 weeks. What on earth? Do nothing for 3 or 4 weeks.
It does seem a very long time.
You think so, do you? If I chose to beg, sir, from people I despise, 3 or 4 months would not be a long time. You may call in a week.
Thank you. I shall look forward to it. Good day to you both.
Nicholas bows low to the young lady and retires.
Mr. Nickleby.
Miss Bray.
I wonder if I might ask for a moment of your time.
An eternity of moments would not be too much to ask.
I don't know whether I do right in asking you, sir. But pray do not talk to anyone of what has passed here today. He has suffered much, and is worse this morning. I beg you, sir, as a favour to myself.
You have but to hint a wish, and I would hazard my life to gratify it.
You speak hastily, sir.
Truly and sincerely. I am not skilled in disguising my feelings, and if I were, I could not hide my heart from you. Dear madam, as I know your history, and feel as men and angels must who hear and see such things, I do entreat you to believe that I would die to serve you.
You cannot say such things. I am already in your debt in so many ways.
Indeed you are not. I am indebted to you, for the pleasure and glorious reward of your company can never be repaid.
You are too kind.
No, I am not. And you must not think that my interest and sympathy expires with the commission of the day. I am your faithful servant, humbly devoted to you from this hour forth. Please do not weep. Every tear breaks my...
Where are you, you lazy child? What kind of daughter neglects her own father?
Madeline, wait!
Nicholas reaches out to Madeline as she disappears behind the door. He slowly lowers his arm and silently leaves the house. And thus ends his first interview with Madeline Bray.